Welcome to Genuine Life Recovery. We're here to help you and your loved ones overcome addictions and other addiction-related mental health challenges. In this show, we dive into the physical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual aspects of addiction, mental health, recovery, family dynamics, codependency, and more. You can listen on your favorite app or at jodystevens.org. Genuine Life Recovery is made possible by great friends like Joshua's Heart, in memory of Joshua Brent Moore, bringing hope, love, and awareness to those afflicted by addiction, online at joshasheart.org, and Jody Stevens Productions for commercial voiceover, narration, production, MC, and public speaking, online at jodystevens.org. Hey friends, welcome back to Genuine Life Recovery. I'm Jody Stevens, joined by Mike Sinelli. Mike is going to share his journey of recovery and faith. Mike is also author of the book Reinvented. I'm not sure if you can see it behind him if you're watching on YouTube. By the time it's all edited up, sometimes people's lovely backgrounds are gone. You know, so I always feel bad about that. We're going to talk about recovery and faith and tricky thinking and shame and resentment and forgiveness and surrender and more recovery tips too. So Mike, welcome. Tell us where you are in the country. I know you're on Eastern Time. How long you've been sober and what you do now?
Well, first, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It's an honor to be here. I'm in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I love it here. I grew up in South Florida, so it's a big change, but I've been here for a little over 10 years and I love it in Chattanooga. Actually, God willing, tomorrow I'll have 3 years clean. And yeah, so that's incredible. And I think that's all that. What was the other question?
And what are you doing now? Like, what's your line of work? I know that you're a speaker and you wrote the book, but of course, we know that doesn't usually pay the bills. I wish it did. I wish this podcast paid the bills, but it pays nothing. In fact, I pay for it, right?
Right. Yes. Well, it's a ministry, right? Yeah. That's it.
That's
it
what I keep telling myself, right?
I know. I hear you. Yeah, I'm an entrepreneur, business owner. I have some rental properties here in Chattanooga and also in South Florida. And then I do some sales as on the side for some extra income to pay for all the stuff.
Totally. I could see that you'd be good at sales. Yeah. Yeah, you got that great personality. My husband's good at sales too. I'm like, can someone teach me to sell? But it's like you either got it or you don't, you know?
Yeah, my wife's the same way. She's like, I wish I could.
I know. I can if I'm out. Like if I'm out and we're talking, then I can just go. But like picking up the phone and cold call, no. So
yeah, that's tough. It is tough. I go to people's houses, so it's a little bit easier.
Yeah. So you've been sober 3 years and you've already got a book. I'm writing one now after 18 years. So that's amazing.
Well, yeah.
You're going. Well, I always like to get to know a person a little bit before we dig into their, you know, past and deep, dark secrets and all that stuff. You know, hi, how are you? Tell us about your addiction, you know. Give us the story of addiction and recovery. As they say in recovery groups, where were you? What did God do? And where are you now?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, you know, I lost my mom at a young age from lung cancer. My dad was a pastor, and we prayed, and I was promised she would be healed if I prayed hard enough as a six-year-old boy. Well, I was 4 years old at the time, and that really put a hole in my heart when she passed. I was angry at God. I, you know, was angry at my dad for what he represented of God and all that. And so I talk about it in my book, but there was moments when I just felt voiceless and validated, unseen. And at 6 years old, growing up like that, it just compounded. My dad remarried and I felt rejected by the situation, not by them personally, like they were doing the best they could, but in the moment I was a young kid and I felt rejected. I felt abandoned. I felt alone. And so that drove me to looking for anything, you know, affection, girlfriends. Then as I got older, got into, you know, drinking, partying. And then one time a girl broke up with me and I was old enough to figure out what drugs were. And I started smoking weed. And then right before my 18th birthday, I was snorting cocaine and smoking crack and started getting into heroin shortly after that, around 20 years old or so. And I tell a lot of stories in the book, some gritty details and vivid about the life that that looks like, you know, stealing and running around on the streets and, you know, all the depravity that comes with using hard drugs like that. And there was, you know, as the years went on, I went through several rehabs and different institutions, jails and different stuff, many detoxes and stuff like that. And each time I would get clean, I started to, the Lord would show himself to me and I would have started to build a relationship with him slowly. It was a slow process. I would have 6 months clean and be building a relationship with him, kind of learning what that looked like. But then the pain would just, I would start to take my will back, white knuckle it. The misery would come back. And then I would be like, well, if I'm going to be miserable, I might as well be high. And did that several times throughout the years. But there was an encounter that I just surrendered to the Lord. I had never thrown out drugs before. And I had a gram of heroin in a hotel bathroom. And I just cried out to the Lord in surrender and dumped that heroin down the toilet. And and the next morning, I did not get sick. I feel like the Lord healed me from, he gave me a reprieve from a detox that one time. Yeah. And I felt like he healed me in that moment. The obsession was gone, but the work had just begun. So now, you know, all the emotional work, Christ-centered therapy, you know, talking with friends, mentors, meetings, sharing my story, helping others. And the Lord has blessed me. I mean, I have a business, and my wife and I live here in Chattanooga and we go to therapy together separately and together, and just keep working at our relationships and our sobriety and just loving Jesus and pressing into him.
Wow. What an amazing story. Thank you so much for sharing that. Let me ask you this. Did you ever take fentanyl? Did you ever find that fentanyl was in, because you were still out there, and we know that is just killing people, because heroin's not heroin. I mean, nothing's, it's all fentanyl practically anymore, you know?
Yeah, definitely. If you get heroin and it's got pink shades to it, it's probably fentanyl. And I got that many times. Knew what it was and did it anyway. And you know, bought, there was pills and stuff that they press now that are all fentanyl. And it's just bad news. Oh. And I was very blessed to not, I did overdose a couple of times and ended up in the hospital with kidney failure and stuff, which I talk about in the book. But very obviously still here and blessed that there's 100,000 people, I think, a year now that are dying from overdose. It's just crazy.
You know, I love how God was walking along with you the whole time. You know, I think that's beautiful, because I continued to drink and blackout and all that stuff like 5 years after I accepted the Lord, you know, and the church might look at that and think people like us aren't even saved, but that wasn't true. God was with me the whole time. And your story kind of reminds me of my brother. He passed away of his addiction in 15, but it was the same thing. Like, he would get some time and be on his knees and praying every day. And then that pain would come in. Like, I never experienced that extreme pain, like the agony that I would see in his eyes. It sounds like you have, Do you know what that was? You know, you talked about being a kid and feeling small or feeling ignored. Did you have any underlying diagnosis, depression or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Through the years, many psychiatrists in the different rehabs and stuff, and always was prescribed different antidepressants and stuff. Yeah. Depression, bipolar tendencies. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the trauma was just excruciating. It was more than I could handle on my own. And I would always try to make up for lost time. And so when I would get clean, I would hurry up and try to make up for lost time and take a whole bunch of extra responsibilities, bunch of jobs, bunch of, you know, bank accounts, whatever, and try to get credit again and all this stuff really, really fast. And that would, I would run ahead of the Lord. And then I would be out there on my own emotionally without him, because not that he left, he's there, but I would be running ahead of him trying to do my own thing and take on too much responsibilities. And then I would be miserable and be mad at God again. Where'd you go? Why did you leave me? You know, and really it's my fault. But then I would just go back and go get high.
You know? My gosh. So. This is like perfect. If you're listening to this, don't do this. Like, and I would watch, even though I'm an alcoholic, I was kind of a little more functional. I mean, I would get drunk every night, black out, and then go to work on the Christian radio station, of course. Hallelujah. You know, but I think of like my brother, it was the same thing. He'd get a couple months sober and he's on the job site and he's building a house and, you know, he's starting a business, and then he goes out on a date with a girl and he relapses because he can't even handle that. So you would get triggered by simple things because we're emotionally like a kid when we get sober or whenever we started. And so you have to deal with all. That's why they always say, you know, baby steps, one day at a time, because the overwhelm will take you down. Did you at some point, it sounds like you at some point figured that out. Like, I got to slow down or I'm a ticking time bomb, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Definitely had to take a step back. When I got clean, I had a small business still, the same business I have, but I had taken on way too much responsibility, and that's why I relapsed. And, I sold some stuff and downscaled our business, took some time off from the sales job, and just started focusing on my family, on healing, on spending time with the Lord. Spending time with Jesus is not a waste of time.
Yes.
And so, started spending time just on personal development, growth, looking at those, trying to make the connection of the unforgiveness and who the unforgiveness is toward and how it's affecting me today, and then make that connection and then start to work through that process. I had held unforgiveness toward my mom because she died. Yeah. I mean, the craziest thing that sounds, I couldn't even think about it, but she abandoned me as a child. It wasn't her fault, but I felt abandoned and I held unforgiveness toward that, and I had to work through. I had to admit it first that that actually happened, because I refused to admit that because it was like betraying my mom. But I had to admit it to myself, grow through it and work through it and give it to the Lord. So
they say in Alcoholics Anonymous, or in the big book as it were, that resentment is the number one killer. And it makes sense, because part of mental health problems is, like, most people that have, like, say, a personality disorder, right? One of the cruxes of that is the inability to self-reflect. And they talk about how anyone, even people with grave mental disorders and physical disorders, can get clean. I'm not quoting it exactly. If they have the capacity to be honest. And you know, and that's what you did, because I think the resentment, the unforgiveness, is just another form of denial, right? It's like, oh, my mom did it to me. Everybody did it to me, right? And when I see people in recovery where it's someone else's fault, I know, I'm like, man, if you don't get it together, you're a ticking time bomb. And I would always know, like with my brother, my mom would be like, oh, he's doing good. And I'd see the attitude and I'd know, and I'd say, and sure enough, it just get worse and worse. Right. And now,
yeah,
after a couple of years, I don't know, for me, 18 years, and I can spot that. Like, I know when I need to get help or get, you know, when the resentment's building, or, you know, like I had a massive depressive episode and I knew everything was threatened, my faith, my marriage, my relationship with God. It was like a church wound, you know, and I knew if I don't get help, I'm going to go down. But I had to be along in my sobriety to know that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The victim mentality is, like you said, will take you down so fast when you feel like you're entitled to for people to do stuff for you. And because you were so hurt and wounded and it's not about them. It's about you.
Yeah. I like to say I've got no one left to blame. Isn't that a free feeling? You know, it's just like, you know, because sure, my parents screwed up like everybody does. You know what I mean? And, you know, what can we do to save your brother and all this and that and fighting and, you know, the drama that comes with addiction and the family. But at some point it was just like, you know what? And I said this to my mom, I said, you know, it's nobody's fault. It's just nobody's fault or it's right. Everybody's fault. Cause if it's right, there's plenty of blame to go around, right? There's plenty.
Absolutely. It's nobody's fault except that you just have to make the connection on what you felt in the moment. Cause they were doing the best. My dad did the best he could after my mom passed. But I felt like he was absent. Yeah. And so in that young age, I didn't understand. So I felt like he abandoned me and rejected me and all this stuff. And so then I held all that unforgiveness. So he wasn't purposely doing that to me. He just was doing the best he could with what he had. And so as soon as I could realize that and start to realize that it was all about my feelings and I had to give it to the Lord and work through it and overcome it and walk, like you said, in honesty.
Yeah. And God sees the little kid. I always say when you're laying on the street with a needle, you know, or whatever, or snorting coke or blacking out, he sees the little kid that was wounded. That's what I always like to tell people. He's not looking at you like you're bad. He sees the pain. He knows. He knows why we do what we do, you know? And that's what's cool. So because you as a little, I mean, you needed so much as a kid. We need so much that we don't get. You know, I think it's we're a little more educated on dealing with children and their feelings and processing. But back then, I mean, none of that ever, you know, how do you feel about your mom? Like you needed to process that. And that didn't happen. Right. And, you know, and so your dad's a pastor. Was this a Christian church or was it like, okay, I was thinking like Scientology because they're praying that, you know, she'll be healed and.
Yeah, no, it was a Christian, non-denominational church, but a woman came and told me, she said, I had a dream that your mom would be healed if we pray hard enough. And I was like 4 years old and that just sunk into my heart and I never forgot it. Yeah. And I prayed and prayed. And 2 years later, she passed. And that was, So it's just to be careful what you say, you know, because God's will is different from his ways are not our ways. And so sometimes it's, you know, he can heal, but sometimes he doesn't.
Right.
So.
Right. That'll always be the big mystery is why, you know, and I think that there's a lot that we can learn through the grief, the death of loved ones, you know, but I don't think we're supposed to ever really get over it. I mean, I think, you know, Jesus said, you'll have trouble in this world. It's hard, you know, and I think, you know, you look at like, oh, Apostle Paul and all the apostles. I mean, look at their lives. You know, I think we kind of expect things to be real easy once we find the Lord, but most people are persecuted. And I mean, life's really hard. And that's how he said it would be. And it is. And we just have to do the best we can and love people, you know, I mean, because it's tough out there.
Yeah. Life is hard regardless of, you know, for everybody, of what your background is, it's still tough. And so we just have to rely on the Lord. But I do believe that there's only one way to permanent healing, and that is through Jesus.
Yes. So. And when you get to go and be that light for other people, that's where the healing comes from. It's not from getting and getting stuff. Like, that makes us miserable. It's from really reaching out, loving, helping others. The service, just like they talk about in recovery, right? You know?
Absolutely. You can't keep it unless you give it away.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So talk to me about denial, tricky thinking, lies we tell ourselves. This is a big one for those listening. If you have someone struggling, or maybe you're struggling with addiction. I know this was something that I did. My big thing was I just wanted God to strike me sober without asking for help. You know, like, I just kept trying to do it on my own, and he wasn't going to have that. How was that for you? Like the lies you told yourself that you could handle it as you kept sort of sinking deeper.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to be the normal person that could go out and still have a few drinks with my friends. So I would be sober for a few months and be like, okay, I can handle it now. I can go and go to the bar after work with my friends and have a few drinks. And I did that for a few weeks. Yeah. And then I would crave cocaine because I would be a little too buzzed, and then the ball would start rolling again. Or, I just want to smoke a little bit of weed. It's not that bad. It's, you know, it's legalized in so many states. It wasn't here, but, you know, whatever. And so there would always be a trick to try to live normal, do a few small things, do it on my own. I tried not including God into my life, and I'll just, you know, plow forward and be fine. And that's just turns into white knuckling, and you just can't stand it. So without dealing with the unforgiveness, any little thing that would happen in my life that mimicked the feelings of rejection or abandonment or anger or whatever,
or shame,
would rip the scab off.
Shame.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Shame from all the stuff that I've done.
We dig ourselves deeper, because the more we drink and use, the dumber things we do, you know, and then the shame just keeps building. Goodness. Like, they call it sober equity, the longer we have good things, and then you have drunk equity. Like, by the time you're done with your run, and there's so many stories. I mean, I look at my brother before he passed, and he was such a sweet little blonde kid, and his eyes were black. I mean, just hard from the streets. I'm like, who are you? You know, and then, all the stuff down in there. And by the time you come out of it, you're just a big ball of crazy emotions, and you don't even know what's going on, right?
You're clueless. Yeah. And anytime that scab would get ripped off, you would just bleed bitterness, resentment, anger, impatience, frustration with everybody around you. And then you would push them away because you'd be so needy or so angry. And then you would blame them because they rejected you, but meanwhile you pushed them away. It's just a vicious cycle that just continues to compound the shame and the frustration of life and stuff. So it was just it's a never-ending cycle if you continue to stay in that blame game, like we just talked about with the victim mentality.
Well, and you seek therapy, you got help, you're in Christian recovery. I mean, this is huge, because without that, you can't figure out all that. You know, for me, there was just a lot of, stop feeling that way, kind of, you know, you with your mom. It's really what it is emotional invalidation, because you needed those feelings to be heard. And when they're not heard, you just stuff them. Like, I'm not supposed to feel this way. Don't feel. So you don't, you keep stuffing that stuff. And then by the time, and then the alcohol and the drugs stuffs it even more. And so we need help and support to get through all that stuff. Cause like for me, I call it the the little thing you wind up and you never know when it's going to pop, you know, and that's what it is. Yep. And the longer you stay sober, right, the more you start to understand all this stuff. And it's beautiful.
Yes.
It's beautiful. It takes time. It's a never ending thing, but
time.
Now you're probably able to look at, okay, I'm feeling sad. So we identify the emotion, right? Because if you can't identify it, and then kind of looking at why, sit through it. Now I don't want to use anymore. But you have to get to the other side of that emotion. If we just drink, we never knew we could handle it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You just stuff it back down. And then once it's stuffed, you lie to yourself and say, well, it's this person's fault or if this was different or whatever. And so, but if you sit with it for a little bit, I call my therapist and ask, hey, let's get an appointment on the books soon. Yeah. Or can we have a phone conversation, you know, or something, or tell my wife, man, I'm just feeling so depressed and I don't even know why today. Yeah. And we talk about it. And sometimes it's just your body remembers trauma and stuff. And there's certain days that your body just feels out of whack and frustrated. But it's not a time to go, maybe take the day off if you can, or take the afternoon after work and just sit and talk to somebody and pray through it. But don't feel like you have to run out and just stop the pain or get happy with some other type of chemical or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
I think we're kind of addicted to happiness in this country or not, you know, I mean, and a lot of people, like a lot of times there is demonic activity and things like that, but sometimes it's just life. And I always try to tell people that, you know, I got to tell the devil to flee. And sometimes that's true, but sometimes it's okay. Like we just, you know, I always say, you know, I won't feel this way tomorrow and it's okay. Like it's kind of normal to feel crappy sometimes and it's okay. And I think we think that we're sort of told that we're just supposed to be sort of happy all the time, but I don't think so. In this world, you will have trouble. He says, I have overcome the world, but you will have trouble. I mean, look at Jesus' life. It wasn't exactly great. I mean, it wasn't bad, but you know, I'm just saying like trouble followed him, you know, and then they killed him. Yeah. So that's, I mean, it's anyway, but there is so much I will say, and I'll let you speak on this. With God, life is never boring. You know, I think most of us, I don't want to get sober because I'll be bored. That's not true. And on the worst day, sober is better than the best day wasted. Don't you think? I mean, it's so much better. So much better.
So much better. Yeah. I mean, even just yesterday, I was thinking, thank God I am the way I am today and not running around. I mean, I just think back on some of those days when I couldn't find drugs and my body was sick. And those were the worst of times. And now I can wake up and not feel that way physically. Emotionally, I still do, like we just talked about, sometimes I do feel depressed or whatever, but I can work through it. But just knowing that there's somebody there, the Lord is always there. He thought about us when he went to the cross. It says in that he holds our tears in a bottle. You know, he writes our story in a book. He remembers us constantly. He knows every hair on our head, even though you might not have any like me.
But, he knows every hair on your beard or your scalp.
Yeah, on your beard. He counts everything for us. Yeah. And so his thoughts of us are so many. And so, it's just something that's comforting to remember that he's always there and he's always faithful. And if we just continue to press into him and spend time with him, he'll reveal himself to us and life will we'll have ups and downs, but we'll be content in whichever place that we're at. And that will give us peace.
It's true.
Even if it seems
bad. You know, people that follow Jesus have a higher rate of staying sober. I know for me, just the joy and the peace that I felt, you know, I continued to drink 5 years after accepting the Lord, and he walked with me through it. Finally, at my bottom, you know, when I finally called and asked for help, I never took another drink after I asked for help, which is what he wanted me to do. But yeah, just the joy, the peace. I think it's so much different with Jesus, because it's we're less likely to be white knuckling it, or, you know, hanging on to something. Some people even, you know, they can't, like, almost, it's almost like the program's their higher power, if that makes sense, you know.
And people and programs of this world will fail you at some point.
Right.
You know, they're going to do something that's going to make you feel rejected, or feel angry, or feel hurt, or mistreated, or betrayed. And that's the human nature. They might not mean it, but there's going to be something that happens that makes you feel that way. And what are you going to do if who you made as your God does that to you and betrays you, makes you feel betrayed? Where are you going to run? You're going to go back to the thing you know the most, and that's probably using or drinking or something, or many other addictions.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many other things out there that we can be addicted to. But Jesus will never fail us. And so if we make him our God and him number one in our lives, he's perfect, and he'll never betray us. He'll never do anything to harm us, and he'll never leave us or forsake us. So then if that's your God, then whatever people do around us, betray us, make us angry, you know, we can press into the Lord, who is our God, and forgive and overcome and walk in contentment and joy and peace.
Right? It's so true. And we don't fight, you know, the Gospels tell us we're not fighting flesh and blood. And, you know, you look around the world and we know that it is corrupt. You know, it is what it is. There's beauty in it. But, you know, when sin came in, it impacted us all. And so I think it's hard to remember that when people are hurting you, that this is a spiritual battle. It's very hard to remember. But if we can remember that, and, you know, like for me, God had to harden me where I needed to be hardened, soften where I needed to be softened, because I was so sensitive. I mean, anything would trigger me, you know? And so sometimes you just gotta toughen up, you know. That was, for me, it was like, just stop, you know? And then the thing too with recovery, and I don't know if you can relate to this, I think it's important to find a good recovery center, but at the same time, if you are dedicated to work the program, it doesn't matter the program. I mean, obviously you want, you know, you've been in a lot of them. There's good, there's bad. You want a really good assessment. You want all those sorts of things. So if you can get into a good one, that's great. I'm sure you've been in some good ones and some really bad ones, but really, I think the bottom line is it will work if you work it, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You have to be in a program though. Like you said, you have to be working some type of program, learning the principles and the steps and how to work through that. The 12 steps were created from biblical principles. So the 12 steps are in the Bible, but to have the steps in front of you is good. There's Celebrate Recovery. That's all about Jesus and all about the steps. So there's a lot of programs, but you do have to be walking with other people that are like-minded, that understand, because an addict's or an alcoholic's brain and thought process is a little bit different than people that have never experienced that type of addiction. So when you struggle with a certain thing and you tell somebody that's been through it, and they say, oh yeah, I get it. But you might tell the same thing to somebody that's never been through it, and they'll look at you like you have three heads, thinking that something's wrong with you. And then you feel like shame that you felt that way. and it just doesn't work. And so that's when you need people that are kind of like-minded around you to understand where you come from. But the principles and the biblical principles of recovery are invaluable.
Yeah. I think that's so important. We have to have the spiritual peace. The other thing too with addiction is a lot of times there is underlying issues. I have to take medication. It's just the way it is. You know, I worked at an opiate treatment center. People would come in and get methadone. And if they worked it, it worked. If they could titrate off. A lot of times in the world and in the church, that's sort of looked down on. But if you think about a kid that's brain has been wired for trauma since they were two, it takes a lot. And you know, and again, I always say that I don't try to push medication, but I always bring that up every episode because I don't want people to feel ashamed because, oh, well, I don't take pills. You know, my brother used to say that. I'm like, well, you're drinking a fifth of vodka every night. Maybe an antidepressant would be better. For me, I had an anxiety disorder and panic attack, like full blown panic attacks. So I was treating anxiety. So anyway, I always say that, you know, if it's heroin, if you need to do methadone, buprenorphine, whatever you probably did, you know, if you need those things, that's okay. You know, that's okay. I think, I don't know what your thought is on all that, but
no, I totally agree. I think that, you know, I was on Suboxone while. I took naltrexone, which is that actually is better than Suboxone because it doesn't have the opiate in it. It just blocks opiates. But if you have to take a medication, antidepressant, some anti-anxiety, you know, I wouldn't recommend the benzos maybe as much if you're coming off of drugs.
They gave me Klonopin. Right when I got sober, he gave me Klonopin, which is like a benzo. Yeah. And I was immediately addicted to that. I'm like, what kind of psychiatrist does that? So you have to do your own research. I mean, 18 years later, I have my MS in addiction counseling. So I've got, I know what all these things are. Like I take something that it's a little bit of Wellbutrin and naltrexone because I'm trying to lose weight. And I was reading about this for opiates and I'm like, I wonder if you could do that for weight loss, you know, cause I'm in 50s, whole menopause. Anyway, I won't go into it, but there's a lot of this stuff. It's working on the reward pathways in your brain. That's a whole nother issue. But the point is it's, they use stuff like this for different things, weight loss. So anyway, I totally interrupted you, but I think our brains, our chemistry, everything gets corrupt. And sometimes we need help along the way. If you can do it without it, way better. You know, way better. Just saying better. That, you know, not all of us are like,
and if you can, and if you can stay committed to, be disciplined and try to wean off of it, if you need it for a year or two or three or five even, but then be committed to try and get off of it with a doctor's help. Obviously some of those things you have to wean off of and stuff. So, but if you can try it and see how, if it works, maybe you don't need it after a little while, after you've healed and went through some of the healing process and gotten more mature and learned how to be more disciplined in your life, then maybe you can come off and not need it.
Well, and that's the point. If you're going to take medication, it's not going to fix anything unless you work on the underlying issues, because as you start to work on the underlying issues, your neurology, your brain will change. Like you can heal your brain into, like, I'm a different person because of continually, being saved, being with God, practicing gratitude, all the stuff. And that changes your brain so that so eventually, you know, like with the naltrexone Wellbutrin thing, I'm like, okay, so if I'm going to take this for a little while, I need to get to really the root of the eating and what's going on, because otherwise it won't do any good. I'll just quit taking it, gain all the weight back. Right. So you have to,
it's
neurological, it's spiritual, it's psychological, it's physical, you know, they call it that whole rounded recovery, or I forget the word that they use, but yeah, you have to address all those pieces, because although we are Christians and we are spiritual, we're living in this crazy physical world, you know? So it's,
and our bodies are decaying every day, you know? And so it's just something that you have to take care of. And, so you can be effective and help people and love Jesus and move on, you know? So,
How, is your dad still alive? Do you still, do you have a relationship with him? Oh, good.
Yeah, I do. He's, him and I have worked. He's heard me, we've talked so much through the years, and I talk about a lot in the book, but he showed up in so many crucial ways throughout the years and times when I was in the real dumps, you know, and he would show up, and he had to learn how not to enable, but to help in the right way. That was tough for him. But but we're really good friends. We talk pretty much every day now. He wrote the foreword for my book. He's actually coming to visit on the 20th in a couple of days. This Monday, he'll be here to visit us. He lives in South Florida still, but he's retired now, and we have a great relationship. Same with my stepmother. You know, she's stuck it out all these years since I was 10 years old. So 30 something years, but she's showed me what perseverance is and sticking by my dad and me. And so, the forgiveness and being able to forgive each other and working through all that, it's been hard, but it's so rewarding at the end.
That's fantastic. What are a couple things you learned in recovery, or even just one that really stuck with you? Maybe it was a scripture concept, something someone said where you just went, you know?
There's a lot. The one thing I can think of right off the bat, off the top of my head, was bloom where you're planted. That was something that I learned in one of the recovery, my first real long-term rehab. Somebody told me that, and it helped me to slow down a little bit and start to just pay attention to where I was and not try to jump ahead and do something different. Just bloom where you planted. But my mom used to tell me all the time before she passed, hard work and perseverance bring reward. And all through the years, even though I was using, I would always remember that. And I think that's what kept me fighting to not give up. Like, no matter how bad it got, I wanted to die sometimes, but I just couldn't do it. I just knew that there was something better out there for me. And I would just do the hard work and go to another rehab and do my time there, and not just do my time, but put in the work into figuring out what it meant to live there and be around those people, and how to deal with all the other personalities and relationships that you get while you're in rehab, all the craziness that happens in rehab, just dealing with it, growing through it, maturing through it. So I think those would be the two things that stuck with me the most, would be hard work and perseverance bring reward, and bloom where you're planted.
I love that, bloom where you're planted. It's kind of a bit of a serenity statement as well, because it's sort of probably the biggest concept for me was just acceptance. I mean, it's like, because when we can't accept, that's the resentment, the control, everything, you know. There's one of my favorite sayings from the Big Book is, "And acceptance is the key to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, some situation in my life unacceptable. And I can find no peace and no serenity until I accept that person, place, or thing is being exactly the way it is meant to be. Nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober." And then it goes on to say, "I needed to not look at so much what needed to be changed in the world and other people, but as in what needed to be changed in me." Isn't that amazing? Like, that's like, oh, that's my great. Gosh.
Love that. Yeah.
You know?
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So talk to me about your book, finally.
Yeah. No, thank you so much. Yeah. So it's Reinvented, My Journey of Addiction and Redemption. It tells my story in vivid detail. There's some gritty stories in there. And, but it is a redemption story all the way. Everything that I put in there was purposeful to show where the pain comes from, the different things that happened. And I hope that people can relate to some of the feelings, maybe not the situations or the specific stories, but the feelings that would come up and the feelings that I would be running from to continue to use in so many horrible ways. But also see that the Lord showed up all through my story. He weaved his story into my story. Well, he weaved me into his story, whatever. But yeah, he was there the whole time. And he ultimately redeemed me. I felt like I know that he healed me. I did not go through a detox the last time. I went through many detoxes and some horrible, horrible detoxes. Yeah. But this last time he gave me a reprieve, but I also write in there that I'm not blind to the fact that if I don't continue to put him first and continue to work on it, it doesn't mean that I can't go back either.
Yeah.
And so I have to put in the work every day, spend time with him, therapy, you know, other people, mentors, the steps, giving away what I have by sharing my story. And that was my main thing, was the book would open a ministry, that I could help people. I want to help those that feel voiceless and invalid and ignored, and that feel like they can't, deal with some of those issues, that they can, and there's help out there. And on my website, I have some practical resources, how to find a detox, how to find a rehab, you know, how to be saved, verse of the day, all kinds of stuff that will help encourage you, how to find a meeting. So you can go on there. It's MikeCinelli.com. It's C-I-N-E-L-L-I, MikeCinelli.com. And you can, and the book is available on all major retailers, Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, but you can also get it on my website as well. But yeah, this is such a blessing, and I just hope that somebody can find hope and healing. There's a salvation prayer at the end, and I just hope that people will just find Jesus throughout that book.
Awesome. Mike, I can't wait to read it. I'm going to go on Amazon and get it, and then I'll have you back on and we'll talk about something different or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, after I read it, I love to read people's stories.
I would love that.
So, okay. Yeah, totally. We could talk about different rehabs or something. You know, there's so much. So.
Yeah. We could, there's a lot of stories in there, but I could give you more details. I left a lot of stuff out.
Because, yeah, nothing shocks me, but, you know, we don't want to shock them.
Well, that's true.
Well,
if you've been through it.
It's, you know, you like to talk a little about it, but then you don't want to glorify the bad. You know, you want to talk about the healing as much as possible, but it's nice because when they read it, we get to see that we're not alone. Oh, I'm so unique. Right. Not really. We've all done that in recovery, you know?
Right.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for coming on. It's been awesome and enlightening. Thank you for sharing your faith and journey of recovery.
Well, thank you for having me. Like I said in the beginning, it's an honor to be here. And I just want to share, be available to help in whatever way I can. So I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, friends, for listening to Genuine Life Recovery, playing on your favorite app or on my website at jodystevens.org. It's JodieStevens, jodystevens.org. There you can check out my podcast, blog, recovery coaching info, speaking, and more. Check it out.